Morning, church. Morning to Prescott Valley. Those of you at Park Collective this morning, it is good to have you with us. Church family at Prescott, welcome, especially if you are new to this space, extra special welcome to you. If you are returning to this space, welcome. One of the things that we believe is that you do not have to believe all the right things to belong. Right? We belong because we're human. God made a place for us when we did not believe the right things. God still stepped in and made a place for us. And so what we do as a church family is we create space. And we create space for people. Why? Because we believe that all people have a life they were created for in Jesus. And so if you're here and you're going, kind of, what is this about? And our hope is that as you feel like you belong just because you're human, that the layers of belonging go so deep when you start to realize that we're a family, that God put us in family and God put us on this journey together, and we get to journey alongside one another, whether that's here in the Prescott location, whether that's at Park Collective, wherever you happen to plant your feet, we hope that you discover that man, there is a family that loves me, that is for me, and we get to do life alongside one another. And the reason for that, the reason we believe so strongly is that there are seasons, right? We've been in this series called Seasons. There are seasons to life. And I don't know about you, but when I think of seasons, there's those natural stages, right? Austin was just talking about one. There's a stage where high schoolers are at a winter camp and God is doing amazing things and they'll carry that back to high schools. But that's a stage of life. And there are stages that we go through that have to do with life. Then there are stages that we go to that have to do with just things that are in our experience of that life. And then there are also things that we experience and we get to walk through that have to do with our faith in the midst of that. And I'll be honest with you, I think a physical stage is a whole lot easier than a faith stage. I think a faith stage can be extremely difficult to walk through. We talked about last week this idea of waiting. And we've kind of captured all the way through that you got to know the season you're in to know the activity that goes along with it. In a really dumb sense, like a silly picture, can you imagine it's football season and you show up to your first football training with all your baseball gear? They would look at you like, wrong season, right? Wrong sport. And so it's just as important when it comes to our faith that we understand the season that God has us in to understand the activity that goes with that season. And with our faith especially, it can be easy to confuse those two. It can be easy that we get lost a little bit and we end up doing things in our faith. For example, if you're in a season of waiting, it's the wrong time to try and go and step out and figure out where God's going. The season of waiting is you, by faith, sit and wait even if you don't understand it. And so these seasons of waiting and these seasons that we go through are extremely important. And this week we hit one that I think is uncomfortable in church world. I think depending on what tradition you come out of may determine kind of how you feel about this one. But maybe a good way to kind of frame it up is you ever been online and you're either about to purchase something or you're about to go somewhere and you decide you're going to read the reviews. Yeah, you ever, any review readers, right? And you start to read the reviews and you start to look at the stars and you go, I'm not going to take anything under this star rating, right? And then you begin to look at the reviews inside of that, and it's not long before you go, okay, we're gonna order this and we're going to get it. And when you get it, it doesn't match up what the review said. Anybody ever had that experience, right? And what happens is your faith in the review process takes a hit. And all of a sudden, you got this little uncertainty the next time you go back to the reviews, especially if you see the same person reviewing something else. You're like, I don't trust you, right? All of a sudden, there's this uncertainty that's been created. There's these questioning of something you weren't questioning before. There's this moment where in the faith world, we would say that uncertainty and questions are a part of this thing called doubt. And doubt are seasons that we go through. I got three stories for you today, okay? So if you're ever wondering, like, if you're here and you're like, when is he done? Well, I got three stories, so you can count them, right? And when we hit the third one, you're like, okay, we're rounding that home base. We're heading home. But the first one is in Mark chapter 9. And they're stories from the life of Jesus. The context of Mark chapter 9 is Jesus has been up on the mount, what they call the Mount of Transfiguration. It's an amazing moment where he takes a few of his disciples. They go up on this mountain and they have an experience where they get to see Jesus for who he is. It's this monumental moment within faith. And they're coming down from this high, coming down from the mountain, from this spiritual high, if you like. And when they get to the bottom, there's a whole group of people, and they're all gathered around the disciples, and they're arguing. To which Jesus walks up and he goes, hey, what are we arguing about? And one of them steps forward. He's a father. And he said, I brought my son to your disciples, and my son has an issue, and the issue is that he is demon-possessed, and this is the way it's played out. But when I brought my son to your disciples, because what I'd heard is your disciples knew how to handle this, they weren't able to heal him. And so there's this situation that's happened that Jesus is stepping into the middle of, and so Jesus says, well, why don't you bring the boy to me? And so in verse 20, it says this, So they brought the boy to Jesus. When the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, how long has he been like this? From childhood, he answered. It has often thrown him into the fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. So the gentleman now engages Jesus in a conversation specifically now about the situation that he's in. Maybe as we walk through these stories, if you're a note taker, I'm just going to give you different things about doubt. And I would say this about doubt, that doubt always has a source. Doubt always, and by doubt, sometimes we go, well, I don't doubt, I just have these questions. Well, I don't doubt, but I'm just a little uncertain. Okay, can we just level the room? If you are human, you have questions. If you are human, you have uncertainty. And if you don't, just wait, because there is a situation that is coming to your life, and it will be the source of questions for you. It'll be a source that you have to work through. It'll be something where you go, I was so certain, and now I'm just working through this, right? Because doubt always has a source. And in this case, this man has come to the disciples. And the reason he's brought his child to these disciples is he's heard that these disciples can heal, can cast out demons, right? Can make his kid whole. And when he gets there, what he's been told in the reviews doesn't match up with what he experiences. And it creates this conversation, these feelings, these emotions, these thoughts inside of him, and he begins to have questions. So much so that when he ends there, he goes, if you can do anything, take pity, have mercy on us. And then verse 23 says, if you can, words of Jesus. Jesus is speaking to him now. If you can, is what Jesus is saying, right? Like there's a question mark there. Everything is possible for the one who believes. Immediately, the boy's father exclaimed, I do believe, help me overcome my belief. I do believe. If you have a physical Bible and you're following along, you need to circle what that man just said. I do believe, help me in my unbelief. What is he doing in this moment? He's admitting to Jesus, God in human form, I have a level of belief, but I also have a whole lot of unbelief tagging along. My situation, the source of my questions, they're coming into the situation. What I love is this, maybe just as doubt has a source, one of the ways that we deal with our doubt is we have to be honest with Jesus. We have to be honest with Jesus. I love that this man doesn't hold back. He's not like, oh, well, you're a religious man. I probably shouldn't tell you this. He just goes in and he goes, no, listen, I believe, but I need you to help. I need you to help with my unbelief. I need you to help me with what I'm struggling to grasp. I need you to help me with what I'm wrestling with. And I love that in this moment, not only does he voice his unbelief, but he also goes, Jesus, I need you to help me. I don't know if you've been around anybody who's having a crisis of faith, but you know one of the most natural things that people in crisis of faith do? They stop talking to people. They stop asking for help. They start to withdraw to figure it out by themselves. And what I'm fascinated about in this moment is with Jesus in front of him, he goes, would you help me? Because I'm struggling to believe. I'm struggling to believe. To which Jesus then, in verse 25, when Jesus saw that the crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the impure spirit. You deaf and mute spirit, he said, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again. The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said he is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet and he stood up. I just need you to catch something right now. Those of you that have said yes to Jesus, that is your Jesus. I need you to catch right now that the demons don't tell Jesus what to do. Jesus tells the demons what to do. I need you to understand the power that exists in you because of Jesus. That there is no weapon formed against you that can stand. There is no scheme of the enemy that can come and overtake you. Because Jesus is the one that sits in the position of power and authority, and he is the one that is determining what the Spirit does. And you just need to be encouraged by that today. But what I want you to catch too is that in this moment, what's happened is this man has been invited, because your doubt is always an invitation. You're going to hear me say this multiple times. Your doubt is always an invitation to engage in your relationship with Jesus at a different level. What has doubt done for this man? It has put him in the presence of Jesus where he's been able to engage, and he has got to see the miraculous happen. It happened through his doubts. As he stood and goes, I need your help. The second story is in Matthew chapter 11. And in Matthew chapter 11, John the Baptist, the context is John the Baptist is in prison. And he's specifically in prison in the capital with Herod, right? Like Herod has him. And so in that context, it starts this way. After Jesus had finished instructing his 12 disciples, he went on from there to teach and preach in the towns of Galilee. Why is that significant? Jesus is continuing to do his ministry in spite of where John is. Verse 2, when John, who was in prison, heard about the deeds of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to ask him, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else? Wait a minute. This is John the Baptizer. This is the front runner for Jesus. He's the one that's out in the wilderness telling everybody about the Messiah who's coming. And when Jesus shows up, he's the one that goes, it's the Lamb of God. He points him out. He sees the Spirit descend. He's had amazing experiences with Jesus. He's the one that's been telling all the others. But can we just be human for a moment? John's a leader, and yet what he expresses in this moment is, I got some questions. I got some uncertainty. And what I love about the uncertainty is where it is expressed. Because he expresses it with what? His disciples. If you lead a life group or you are any kind of leader in the kingdom of God, can I encourage you that we could learn an awful lot from the humility of John? He lays down his role as leader. He doesn't hold that as a position and go so often as we do in church, right? If you're a leader, you got to have it all together. If somebody comes to you as a leader, you know, one of the number one reasons people don't step into being a leader in the church, guess what it is? I don't have all the answers. Guess what? You'll never have all the answers because they're an invitation to what? Relationship with Jesus. So can we just free ourselves from having the, do you know what a great answer is, by the way? I don't know. Let's journey together and figure out what that is. But doubt always has a source, right? And for John, the source is, wait a minute. I thought when Jesus showed up, he was going to set up his kingdom and I'm going to roll in his kingdom because he's the Messiah that's going to save us. He's going to set up a physical kingdom that I will be a part of. And now John's sitting in a jail cell and it's getting more and more evident he's probably going to die. And the source of his questions is, wait a minute, it doesn't look anything like I thought it would be. And I have some questions. But what I love is he goes to his community. There was a number of years ago, my wife and I were missionaries in Canada. And we were there a total of 5 years. And in the second year, about halfway through, there was a source of questions in my life. And so now I'm a leader of this entire year of training for missionaries, right? So I'm a missionary, which already, if you've ever met a missionary, they already feel like they're put on a pedestal by the church. I grew up as a missionary kid where we could get hauled to churches. And literally it was like, you have to be perfect so that they think we're perfect. And so we're missionaries I begin to have these questions. And they're deep questions. There are questions that I'm wrestling with on a soul level. And so I went to one of the leaders of the organization and I began to express some of my questions. And what I got back was these answers that weren't even answers to the questions I was asking, but they were the stability that faith was built on, right? You don't ask those questions, which then just left me with more questions. And so now I've got this inner turmoil and I'm like, God, I need you to help me. And so it was spring break and I was praying earnestly going, God, I just need your help to work through whatever this is. And God, I ended up at you remember those things called bookstores? I ended up at a Christian bookstore, which all that means is everything in it is supposedly Christian, right? And literally you can laugh at that because if you've ever been to one, right? Like, okay, t-shirts that somebody's got a good slogan that they think is in the Bible, you know? But so I'm in this Christian bookstore and this interesting thing happens that there's all these books on this side of the room. And they're all the books that are all the popular books and all the books that you should read if you're a good Christian, right? Nothing wrong with those books, by the way. They're all there. Over here, there was this rickety old, look like I'd made it bookshelf. And these books that were under this dim light and they had a title on it. And just walking over there, I felt like I was like sinning, you know, it's one of those moments. And I pick up this book and it just captures me. And I put it down and I go back and I look at all the books I should be reading and I go back and I pick up this one again. And I ended up buying the book and it ended up setting me free. Because all the book did was made it okay to ask questions. It reminded me that Jesus actually engages me in the questions because it's a relationship. And it actually led me to the point where we began to ask God, like, we need to go somewhere else and do something else. Like, you're calling us somewhere else. And that's how we ended up at Heights. But if it wasn't for being honest with the journey of questions, we wouldn't have been able to take the steps and lean into the relationship that God had. I wonder how many of us, because we're caught up with a title we have or we're caught up with some situation that we don't actually get to the heart. Or the other thing is you're so busy bolstering up your faith by these little, you know, you have these little sayings and whenever you begin to think or feel this way or question this, you just throw out the saying like that's supposed to be a structure that you can stand on. It'll collapse. But what I love is that the questions here happen in safe community. You know why life groups are so important? You're supposed to be able to go into your life group and sit with your life group and go, I am really struggling here. And your life group's not supposed to look at you and have all the answers. But they're supposed to walk with you and bolster you up and together as a community walk forward. I think what's fascinating, if you've heard the phrase deconstructing your faith, we had a conversation in our teaching prep meeting this week, and that idea of deconstructing your faith has become kind of a popular, like, it's the cool thing to do. But what deconstructing has become is, this is my way of saying goodbye to my faith. Can I tell you that deconstructing is actually, it was designed for you to dig into your faith so that you would bolster your faith, so that you would be stronger. And what's amazing with deconstruction, by the way, is how many people want to isolate to deconstruct. How many people want to step away from their safe community? How many people have you been around over the years that have been a part of life groups or been a part of your spiritual journey, and then they start to have questions, and what do? I got to go figure it out, and they never come back. You know why? Because when you isolate yourself, you open yourself up. Also in our teaching prep meeting this week, we were talking about isolation, and Pastor Ben goes, it reminds me of 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. He says, where the devil is as compared to a roaring lion looking for who he can devour. You know how lions hunt, right? They look for the person that is wounded, that is weak. They look for the animal that is wounded, that is weak, that is isolated, and they're going to go get that one first. So when we as believers choose to isolate from our safe community because we got to work through something, right? And now we're isolated. Guess what? All you've done is set yourself up for the enemy to step in. And guess what? He devours pretty easily when you're in isolation, which is why it's so important that when we read about John, he's having these conversations with his disciples, with his safe community. And his safe community helps him by what? Going to Jesus and saying, hey, John's got some questions. Are you the one? To which Jesus says, Jesus replied, go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me. You know what you don't hear there, right? What? John has questions? Have I not given him enough time? I let him baptize me. How could he saw the Spirit? Jesus doesn't do that. Jesus says, go back and tell John that the blind see, the lame are walking, the deaf are hearing, those that have leprosy, which was unheard of that you could cure leprosy, they're being cured. And so the disciples go back. I love the safety of Jesus with our questions. You know Jesus isn't scared of your questions, right? In fact, he wants you to engage in why? Because it will push you further into relationship with him, which is what you were always designed for. If I put it in the context of being a dad, how sad if my kids couldn't come and sit and ask me any question because they were scared of what dad was going to do. There's one other story, and it's in John chapter 20 and verse 24. Now Thomas, also known as Didymus. Okay, let's pause for a second. Anyone who is pregnant in the room or even in Park Collective, if you are pregnant, I'm just saying Didymus is a pretty cool name. Okay? And if you don't use it, my next bulldog is probably going to be called Didymus, just saying. Now Thomas, also known as Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the other disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, we have seen the Lord. But he said to them, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. Remember, Dad always has a source, right? What is Thomas's source? All these other disciples, they had an experience that Thomas didn't have. He missed their experience. You ever feel that way sometimes in Christian circles? Is that everybody else had the experience and I didn't? And yet that's exactly what he's experiencing. And he makes this statement, it's an emotional statement, right? He goes, unless I see the nail marks, unless I can put my finger in the nail marks, I will not believe. Verse 26 says, a week later, I love that just because we're in seasons, it's worth pointing out. He's in a season of questioning. He's in a season of doubt, uncertainty. And God puts him in a season of waiting, gives him a week. Just think about it, Thomas, just process for a week. A week later, his disciples were in the house again. And Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. Then he said to Thomas, put your finger here, see my hands, reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe. Thomas said to him, my Lord, my God. Then Jesus told him, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed, this is you, blessed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. You're blessed today. Jesus shows up. They're back again. This time Thomas is like, I am not gonna get the groceries. I'm staying right where I am. And wouldn't you know it, Jesus shows up for who? Don't miss this. He shows up for Thomas. And he comes to Thomas and he tells Thomas the exact thing that Thomas had said where? In that room with the others, but Jesus physically wasn't there. Maybe an encouragement to you today is sometimes in our doubts and our questions, we can feel like God doesn't see us. But what we have with Thomas is proof that God and Jesus, the person of Jesus and his love for you will provide for you what you need, whether you think he hears you or not. And he shows up and he goes, Thomas, here. To which Thomas goes, I'm good. I'm good. My Lord, my God. I love that when it comes to doubt, Thomas's source was that he'd missed. And I love that Jesus shows up by grace and gives Thomas what he needs for where he is. Why? Because doubt is about you engaging in your relationship further with Jesus. Isn't it interesting that as a church tradition, doubt has become something that we're scared of, that we fear, that we try to bolster up. If somebody has a question, we try to bolster up their faith as quickly as we can. But don't miss that in the midst of your struggle, stay in safe community. Like if we can just get practical, stay in safe community. Be honest with Jesus. Just like the father in the first story, I'm struggling to believe. Ask Jesus for help. Ask your community for help. But can I encourage you? Keep with the rhythms. Keep with the rhythms of faith that you already have established. So if you're in a season of questioning, don't stop coming to church. Don't stop putting yourself in a space where worship is gonna happen. And you may be like, John, that's fine, but I don't feel like singing today. Then don't sing. It's not about whether you sing or not. It's about what's made of God in that moment and what it does to your soul. Have you ever had an experience where you're standing in the midst of worship and it just feels like a weight was lifted off? And it has very little to do with what you did and has everything to do with what is being declared about God and who He is. I love that in the church and in a worship moment, that you singing because you can is actually bolstering the faith of the person next to you that can't. Because you're a pillar of hope. Just like Austin talked about seeing all those students as a hope for the future, you are a pillar of hope for the person next to you. When you open your mouth and you declare this is who God is, the person next to you that cannot open their mouth today, you are a pillar of hope to them. Can I encourage you that if you're in a season of questions and whatever your source is that's caused them, go find other believers that have been through the same thing. You're not that unique. Go find other believers. And if they don't exist in your life group or you can't find them in church, look at the church and ask them a question when you get to sit with them. How do you still love Jesus after everything you've been through? And let their story encourage your heart. Last thing before we sing is that in your doubt, Jesus is a waymaker. What do I mean by that? We have three stories. You know what I love about Jesus? He doesn't respond the same in any of them. To the first one, he provides a miracle. It's visible, you can see it. To John, who is a leader, who you would think Jesus would go and do the miracle for, guess what John got? Go back, take my words, carry my words and share them. His safe community carried the words he needed from Jesus to John. Totally different than the first one. And Thomas, Jesus showed up in person. I'm gonna go ahead. By grace and mercy, I'm making a way, Thomas, for you to believe. What does God want to do today in the midst of your life through the questions and the uncertainty that you have? How does He want to deepen your relationship with Him through where you are? Be true to it. Sit with Jesus. But before you move anywhere, we're going to stand. We're going to sing. And we're going to declare over this entire space, Park Collective, you're going to declare there. And I hope it ripples to our entire community that in our moment of faith weakness, Jesus is a waymaker. Would you pray with me? God, we come before you. God, thank you for today. Thank you for these moments. Thank you for your truth. Thank you for your word. Thank you for the way you journeyed with us for so long. Thank you for the way you journeyed specifically with the individuals in these stories. Jesus, thank you for the way you are so patient. Thank you for the way you long for us to engage deeper in a relationship with you. Our questions continue to strip the religion away. Would you continue to unsettle us? Would you continue to have us work through to find that you are enough, that you are a way maker, that you will bolster our faith. And so God, as we stand and we sing, I pray over this room, I pray over Park Collective today. God, I pray that we would be the voice for those that don't have a voice this morning. For those that are struggling. And God, would we declare that you are the way maker. God, that you are a promise keeper. You're our light in the darkness today. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for dying on a cross that we may be saved for all of eternity. We are grateful people, and everybody said, amen.